congratulations to all Iranians and everyone who celebrates the ancient festivity of Nowruz.
Headline: Saudi warplanes bomb civilian targets in Yemen after the Yemeni army fires missiles at multiple Saudi targets, including Aramco facilities, on the 7th anniversary of the war. Ukraine's President Zelensky urges energy producers to increase output to help EU wean itself off Russian supplies. Plus, Iran says it reserves the right for drilling an Arash gas field in the Persian Gulf, warning that a decision by Kuwait and Saudi Arabia to produce gas at the shared field is illegal. Hello and welcome, everybody. Our top story for this half hour: deadly Saudi air raids on Yemen continue unabated. Saudi Arabia has launched a series of attacks against the war-racked country, targeting Yemen's facilities in response to Friday's missile strikes by the Yemeni army. At least 8 people, including women and children, were killed after the Saudi warplanes carried out attacks targeting residential areas in the capital, Sana'a. Several others were also wounded. The warplanes also raided oil and electricity facilities in the port city of Hodeidah. Local sources say the raids caused massive damage to residential neighborhoods and civilian facilities. A number of areas in the province of Sa'da were also targeted. The attacks happened after the Yemeni army targeted Saudi state-run oil giant Aramco facility in Jeddah and other vital sites in the capital, Riyadh, with missiles. The army said the attacks were carried out on the eve of the 7th anniversary of the Saudi war on Yemen.
In response to the ongoing unjust siege on our country and our people, the Yemen Armed Forces underwent the third breaking siege operation through ballistic missiles and drones in the following manner. We targeted Aramco facilities in Jeddah and other locations in the capital of our Saudi enemy, Riyadh. The targeting of Ras Tanura and Rabigh refineries with a large number of drones. The targeting of Aramco in Jizan and Najran with a large number of drones. Targeting locations in Jizan and Dahran in the south, as well as Abha and Khams Masjid with ballistic missiles. The armed forces will continue to carry out attacks on important targets with the aim of breaking the siege.
Facilities belonging to the Saudi state oil company were also hit in Jizan and Najran in the south. The Yemeni army also says it launched drone attacks against oil refineries in the east of the kingdom. According to the army, multiple vital targets in several other locations, including in Abha and Asir region, have also been hit by ballistic missiles. The army says it will continue its retaliatory military operations until Riyadh stops its years-long aggression and lifts its all-out siege on Yemen. Leader of the Ansarullah movement, Abdul Malik al-Houthi, has condemned the international community for remaining silent in the face of what he called Saudi crimes against the Yemeni people.
As the world's eyes are on the Russia-Ukraine conflict, the Saudi led war in Yemen is still taking the lives of more civilians and pushing the country to the brink of famine. A recent UN report says 17.4 million Yemenis are food insecure, and the number is likely to go up to 19 million by the end of the year.
Unfortunately, the United Nations reports did not clarify the main reason for the deterioration of the humanitarian situation in Yemen, which is the blockade imposed by Saudi Arabia and its allies. The only solution to end the humanitarian crisis is to lift the siege and allow Yemenis to import food and medicine.
Back in 2015, Saudi Arabia and its allies launched a deadly war in Yemen to bring back to power former President Abdurrabbu Mansour Hadi. Hundreds of thousands of people, including women and the children, have lost their lives since then.
I was sitting in my house with my children in the evening, and suddenly a missile struck the next house. The explosion destroyed my house as well. We were so afraid.
Saudi warplanes targeted our neighborhood. This is a crime, and unfortunately, the world's watching in silence.
The Saudi war has impacted all aspects of civilian lives in Yemen, including the healthcare system, which is on the verge of collapse. This comes amid the ongoing fuel shortage, as Saudi Arabia keeps detaining Yemeni oil ships despite the fact that the vessels have UN permits.
We suffer from a severe lack of fuel. We cannot operate medical devices without electricity, not to mention the lack of medicines and medical solutions. There is overcrowding in the medical centers. Unfortunately, the United Nations did not provide us with anything other than media statements. The international community must stop Saudi Arabia from seizing Yemeni oil ships.
Children are the most affected people by Saudi Arabia's war. The rate of child malnutrition is one of the highest in the world, and the situation continues to deteriorate.
More than a million children are suffering from malnutrition in Yemen, and I believe the number is greater than this. And we are coming to a worse period because we do not have the most basic needs necessary to save the lives of sick children, such as milk, solutions, and medicines.
Observers say the years-long Saudi war in Yemen has only created the world's worst man-made humanitarian crisis. They say years of failure should be enough for Riyadh to start looking for other means to get rid of the quagmire it is stuck with its war in Yemen. Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Well, the month-long Russian military action on Ukraine has raised concerns over energy supplies all over Europe. Now Ukraine is urging energy-producing countries to increase output to help the EU wean itself off Russian supplies.
I ask you to increase the output of energy to ensure that everyone in Russia understands that that no country can use energy as a weapon and blackmail the world.
President Volodymyr Zelensky made the call in an address to the Doha Forum International Conference. He said countries like Qatar could make a contribution to the stabilization of Europe. The Ukrainian leader said the future of Europe depends on efforts of energy-producing countries. Zelensky's comments come as energy prices have soared recently in Europe, mainly due to sanctions imposed by the West on Russia's energy sector. Over the Ukraine conflict, now Europe is trying to find ways to reduce its dependence on Russian gas. It's day 31 of the Russian conflict in Ukraine. Johnny Miller is in the capital, Kiev. We only spoke to him about the latest situation there and in other Ukrainian regions as well. Let's take a listen.
Well, in Kiev at the moment, everything is quite peaceful. The last strike here, missile strike, was about 3 or 4 days ago at a shopping center. There hasn't been any strikes since. The sirens in Kiev blare a few times every day. You can hear bombing in the distance. But the hope here in Kiev is that Kiev won't be attacked at all. The Russians have said that the first phase of their, as they say, special military operation, the war here, is over. And now they're going to concentrate on the east, the Donbass region. There are some reports that the Ukrainian army has taken back some towns outside Kiev. These are unconfirmed, but it looks like at the moment, as the Russians are saying, they're focusing on the east. And the hope here in Kiev is that there won't be as many missile attacks here. And indeed, the hope is they won't attack Kiev at all. I think in the war so far that they planned to win the war in a matter of days. They hoped that the Ukrainian army would capitulate. That hasn't happened, of course. The Ukrainians put up a fierce fight. It's very difficult to know what the Russian plan was, so it's difficult to know whether they've changed plan or whether this was their plan all along. But now, as I said, they are saying that they're going to focus on the east, Donbass and Luhansk. They've said that that's their major war aim, to make these places into independent republics. Right now, they're fighting over Kharkiv and Mariupol. It's difficult to know whether they plan to take Kiev or whether that they've changed that plan. But at the moment, the focus is very much on the east of the country. Well, there's been a lot of strikes, it's difficult to know just how much of the Ukrainian military has been destroyed by Russia. The Ukrainians claim they've killed tens of thousands of Russian soldiers. The Russians themselves claim that that figure is only 1,500. So it's difficult to know in terms of casualty figures and how much military equipment either side has destroyed.
U.S. President Joe Biden visits Poland to meet with service members and refugees as he appears to suggest that American troops would be sent to Ukraine.
And you're going to see when you're there, and some of you have been there, you're going to see women, young people standing in the middle of front of a damn tank, just saying, I'm not leaving. I'm holding my ground.
The White House, however, said Biden has not changed his stance and the U.S. will not deploy forces to Ukraine. During his trip, Biden also once again called Russian President Vladimir Putin a war criminal. The U.S. currently has around 100,000 troops in Europe, but NATO says the conflict in Ukraine has created a new security reality in Europe, one that will be met with more military spending and more deployments of troops to Eastern Europe. Russia, on the other hand, has repeatedly described NATO's eastward expansion as a threat. A new report has revealed that Russia's allegations over the involvement of the U.S. president's son in financing biological laboratories in Ukraine are true. According to the British news website Daily Mail, emails from Hunter Biden's abandoned laptop show that he helped secure millions of dollars of funding for a U.S. contractor active in Ukraine. The contractor is specializing in researching pandemic-causing pathogens that could be used as bioweapons. Moscow says Washington must explain about Hunter's role in the projects. It has also accused the U.S. and Ukraine of working with pathogens and of dangerous infections in 30 laboratories across the country. However, Western countries dismissed the allegations as Russia's propaganda aimed at justifying its military operation in Ukraine. Barry Grossman is an international lawyer and political analyst. He says the new findings prove how the U.S. intelligence controls the American mainstream media.
This just goes to show how pathetic the corporate media cartel can be and how infiltrated it is these days by the U.S. intelligence apparatus. I can understand people raising questions about what the facts mean, but to completely ignore the facts is a whole different thing. What these emails establish is that Hunter Biden not only raised funding for a U.S. defense contractor specializing in bioweapons and bioresearch in the Ukraine, but that Hunter and his mates also invested in that operation. And moreover, there are emails which have a senior member of the defense contractor speaking to Biden about how their involvement in this project might be leveraged to assert the Ukraine's freedom or independence, if you like, from Russia, and to integrate it into Western culture and the Western economies.
Well, Iran has rejected as illegal a decision by Kuwait and Saudi Arabia to produce gas at a Persian Gulf field shared by the three countries, saying it reserves a right for drilling in Arash gas field. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Said Khatibzadeh says based on international regulations, any decision to tap Arash field has to be discussed with all parties, including Tehran. He said the agreement is illegal. And in contrast to previous negotiations, Khatibzadeh noted that the gas field is a joint field between Iran, Kuwait, and Saudi Arabia, while parts of it are located in areas between Iran and Kuwait whose water boundaries have not been defined. Earlier, the two Arab countries signed a deal to ramp up the output of gas reserves, ignoring Iran's right in the Persian Gulf area. Well, for more on that story, we're joined by radio host and journalist Jeff J. Brown, joining us from Normandy. Mr. Brown, welcome to the program. Please help us understand what is the status with respect to the delimitation of maritime boundaries, and how are the shares of each of these three countries from these huge gas reservoirs determined?
This goes to the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Seas in 1982. And there are basically two major territories. There is the 14-kilometer territorial waters, and this is the military one where you can, if you go inside the 14 kilometers, it's innocent. It has to be innocent passage. This is what the United States does in the South China Sea. They will send a frigate within 14 kilometers of an island in the South China Sea that is claimed by China. What makes it so difficult in the Persian Gulf is that the next step up is economic zone waters, and this is 370 kilometers. There are very few places in the Persian Gulf that even have 370 kilometers, and maybe not any, maybe the United Arab Emirates and Iran, if you stretch it as far as you possibly can. And this is where you get all these overlapping claims. And so technically, you know, they go out and meet where they in the midpoint, and it has to be then go to negotiations and signing agreements.
Thanks a lot, radio host and journalist Jeff J. Brown joining us from Normandy. Moving on, Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian has visited Lebanon, holding talks with the country's officials. During the talks, he once again voiced Tehran's all-out support for Beirut. Israeli crop duster planes have sprayed toxic herbicides on Gaza's farmlands as Tel Aviv continues its inhumane acts of aggression against the impoverished coastal enclave. Farmers in the Gaza Strip see no end in sight for their suffering as Israel continues to destroy their crops. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Congratulations to all Iranians and everyone who celebrates the ancient festivity of Nowruz.
During the Vietnam War, the U.S. military engaged in an aggressive program of chemical warfare codenamed Operation Ranch Hand. Now, from 1961 to 1971, the U.S. military sprayed a range of herbicides across more than 4.5 million acres of Vietnam to destroy the forest cover and food crops used by North Vietnamese. I'm Daniel Arya, and this is Aperture. Agent Orange, which contains the deadly chemical dioxin, was the most commonly used herbicide. It was later proven to cause serious health issues, including cancer, birth defects, rashes, and severe psychological and neurological problems. But the Vietnamese were not the only ones affected. U.S. soldiers unknowingly brought the legacy of Agent Orange back home. Join us for this week's Aperture as we meet three children of U.S. veterans who fall victim to Agent Orange and follow them as they travel to Vietnam to face their demons. Here's the first part.
All I ever heard was war stories about how horrible it was and how violent everything was and that there was just death and destruction. And that's the picture that was painted in my head of what Vietnam was. And it scared me half to death when I was getting ready to come over here, to the point where I was actually shaking on the plane on my way here because I did not know what to expect.
Traveling here, someone said, you know, Heather travels back to the land of her father's demons. Vietnam is still a very scary, dangerous place to them.
I was actually very nervous and very scared. Several of my father's friends kind of scared me about some of the things that I may see and hear and experience. Their vision of Vietnam was a war-torn, angry place.
guys have any bottled water before we get going, just in case?
My name is Josh Kelly. I was born on August 18th, 1975.
My name is Heather Bowser. My maiden name is Morris.
My name is Rachel Harding. I was born in northern Indiana near Chicago.
My dad was Daniel Kelly. He was in the U.S. Marine Corps, and he fought in Vietnam.
My parents had married 9 days before he had left for Vietnam. They said that, you know, if they had 9 days being together, that's what they wanted to do.
My father got his draft papers when he turned 18 and chose to marry my mother before he left. They got married, and 2 weeks later, he was deployed to Vietnam.
I've been trying to find out what exactly happened when he was there, because when I was younger, I tried to block the stories out because some of them were so scary and so violent and all that, that I just tried to not even listen to them because I didn't want to hear it because they scared the fuck out of me because I was just a kid.
Home, I'm coming home. No more marching and fighting for me. I am a soldier.
When they came home, they wanted to put the war behind them. The Vietnam War was a very difficult political time, civil rights time, and so wanting to put it behind them, start their family, and move on.
As soon as he came home, they chose to wait to have children. They waited about 7 years before they decided to try, and I was the firstborn.
The string's already broken, and he doesn't really care. It keeps changing fast. It don't last for long. It's the Colorado Rocky Mountain High.
So my mother had two miscarriages. She lost two children. And no one in our family had had any kind of problems in that respect. So it was very unexpected. And then in 1972, my mother was pregnant again and felt that she had gone into labor early. She was not due for a while. They went to the hospital. She had already lost two children, so she was very scared. She thought she might be miscarrying again at the very late time in the pregnancy. They rushed her into the hospital, and she said, I'm in labor. And she was very thin, and they kind of said, no, you're okay. It's okay. You're going to be all right. You're not in labor. You barely look pregnant. She was 7 months along at that point. My mother woke up to my father sitting at her bedside telling her, and it's hard to talk about, but he said, Sharon, she's damaged. And that's what she woke up to. So I can only imagine how scary that was.
The doctors, as soon as I was born, they took me from my mom and they put me in a little incubator, and then they rushed me off out of the room. They didn't explain anything to my mom. They just said that there was problems.
Various doctors approached my mother at different times and asked what she had done to her child. What had she done to cause such terrible problems?
They brought her over to show me to her for about 5 minutes, and then they put me on an airplane and they flew me to another state, and they kept me in the incubator, and they put me in intensive care, and they had all kinds of doctors looking at me and checking to see if I was going to live or die or what the deal was, because missing my arms and my leg, they weren't sure what all was wrong with me. They started to take me to the doctors and stuff out there, and because they were big hospitals and there was lots of doctors from around the world and everything, they wanted to try a whole bunch of different surgeries and stuff that were like experimental surgeries that nobody had ever tried before. Like, one of them was that they wanted to grow my arms back, and the way that they were going to do it is they were going to cut the skin open, break the bone, and then they were going to drill holes through it and put screws in it and put plates to separate the bone, and the bone would grow in between the gaps. And they said that it could take up to 5 to 10 years for my arms to finish growing back, and that it would be an extremely painful.
I want to go back to real quick to one memory I had in kindergarten. We were learning about our hands. This is your left hand, this is your right hand. And it's always a memory that I kind of laugh about. I love school. I couldn't wait to go to school. I was so excited. I wanted to read and do that stuff. So we're sitting in this circle, and the little children are sitting there, and I can just remember this to this day. And there was like a board on the floor, and it had a picture, an outline of a hand and another hand. And each child was to go around and take their turn and say, this is my left hand, this is my right hand, this is my left hand, this is my right hand. And so I remember just being anxious and excited to do my turn. And I went to put my hand in, and I just, at that moment, I was like, oh, okay. Because they had the outline, and my fingers didn't match the outline. And I was like, huh, okay, this is my left hand, this is my right hand, but they don't look like that left hand and that right hand. And that was kind of like, okay, I'm different. That's different.
Pretty much all my life, as far back as I can remember, I knew I was different because I was always going to the doctors. And I would always see the other kids playing and stuff, and I couldn't really go play with them because I either had doctor's appointments or they didn't want anything to do with me.
I have lost 19 children. I never carried more longer than 8.5 weeks, and I would lose my children. I have hypothyroidism, the infertility issue, and psoriatic arthritis. Those are the three biggest ones that I have that affect my life personally. And my family could not understand, my father included, could not understand, where did this come from? Nobody else in the family's ever had this. How come you're suffering from this and nobody else ever has?
I've seen lots of different kids that had disabilities and stuff from being like in the hospitals and stuff all the time. And some of them are so similar that it would have to be from the same thing. The similarities in our disabilities is so much alike. There's no way to deny that it was the same thing that caused both of them.
These are the structural formulas for 2,4-dichlorophenoxyacetic acid, commonly known as 2,4-D and 2,4-5-T. From these chemicals are made a large number of closely related compounds, which are sold commercially for weed and brush control. The Secretary of Defense initiated a project to determine whether visibility in troublesome jungle vegetation in the Republic of Vietnam could be improved by aerially applied chemical sprays. In that country, jungle growth, swamp foliage, and roadside vegetation retains its leaves the year around. Consequently, it affords ideal concealment to guerrilla terrorists who sporadically attack the free people of Vietnam. As a result of these tests, defoliation spraying was placed on an operational basis. Those chemicals already proven most effective as defoliants will continue to be used until faster-acting types.
So my father says that he said that there was spraying of his base pretty regularly. I found out since that his base was practically sprayed every day, and that is also due to its proximity to Benoit.
Benoit was the epicenter of where Ranch Hand worked out of. So if they had anything left on their missions, they came around that area and used it. The perimeter was hand-sprayed, aerial spraying with the C-123 planes.
My dad was in the U.S. Marine Corps. He was stationed in the Chulai Air Base, and while he was there, he was exposed to lots of Agent Orange. They sprayed it on everything. It was in the food, it was in the water, it was on their clothes, it was on the plants, it was on the guns, the ammo, everything had Agent Orange on it. So he was heavily exposed to Agent Orange.
North Vietnam charged today that defoliants have produced many instances of miscarriages, congenital defects, and monstrosities among children.
As we anticipated, the Vietnamese doctors that we've met with very much share our concerns about the effects of Agent Orange.
Although that war was long ago, there is lingering anger about the United States' use of a controversial defoliant spread by American aircraft on the jungles there.
Milton Ross, a special forces advisor near Pleiku, has a son born without the tips of his fingers.
Frank Moore is nearly dead from cancer. He thinks the cancer was caused by chemical defoliants he was exposed to as a soldier in Vietnam.
My dad explained to me about how dangerous the stuff was because it would kill off big old trees and everything in just a couple of days. He would tell me the stories about how he would have to mix it and he would have to load it into the tanks and he would put the tanks on the planes and the helicopters and everything while he was in the war.
It's still causing trouble and all of the people that have lost their lives to Agent Orange, and this is kind of where it began. So it's very sad.
We found out that the rate of miscarriages, fetal death in utero, and birth defects are 4 times higher than in the exposed, among the exposed, than the non-exposed. We have carried out some more studies. I'm now very sure, certain, that toxic chemicals cause many things to my people, to the exposed people. Cannot deny it.
Yes, exactly.
Cannot deny the relationship between dioxin with the abnormal outcome of pregnancy, among the exposed people.
After the wartime, I mean, after 75, his dad came back here and they have the first child. But due to the Agent Orange, she or he died after 10 days. The biggest biggest child of the family is a normal child because he was born before the time that the death came to the army.
But do you know in America who carries the pain of Agent Orange? The veterans who serve. The veterans feel responsible.
Yes.
Our fathers felt responsible
for us.
Even for in Vietnam. I mean, they felt responsible. The soldier, not the chemical companies or the government that made the decisions.
So my father felt extreme guilt. He felt like he had caused my birth defects. He had told my mother that every time he looked at me, he felt that it was his responsibility. He had caused this to me. And that's a major problem in the United States, trying to work through the Agent Orange issue, is that the veterans feel extreme guilt.
The man that my mom knew from the time she was 4 did not come home from Vietnam. He's still wandering around in the jungle somewhere. He came home a very angry man, very sad man.
My dad was suffering more and more from his PTSD. He was having other health issues and he was getting weak and he couldn't He couldn't do the things that he could do before, and his health was just going downhill.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to For a Better Life with me, Javed Akbari. Dear brothers and sisters, if you want to achieve happiness and a better life in this world, it's not enough to practice some prayers or fasting and the like. Though prayers and fasting are important, they are essential, they are obligatory, but happiness cannot be guaranteed. In order to achieve happiness and a better life, we should first of all know our Lord. and we should know his religion, the religion that God has sent for humanity. We should obey certain laws according to that religion. We should make our characters and spiritual qualities as God pleases. So religion is not only about praying and fasting. Religion begins with one's belief in the fundamentals of faith. There are fundamentals, there are principles, there are roots of the religion which we must have faith in. And we must believe in those principles with our own knowledge, with our own insight. We cannot rely on our parents and on anyone else when it comes to believing in the fundamentals of faith. And those fundamentals of faith are monotheism, they are believe in the hereafter, believe in imamate, believe in divine justice, believe in the prophethood. And these are the five principles that we must believe in. And then after we believe in these, we have to obey certain laws. And those laws are within the religion. They are part of the religion through which we can get closer to Allah. Those are also instrumental. In addition to the belief in the principles of faith, we should practice certain laws. We should make our characters and spiritual qualities as God pleases. When it comes to the creeds and beliefs, what should we do in respect of those creeds? According to Islam, every person is asked to investigate religion. One should think, one should reflect, study, and discuss religion. Some religious beliefs are necessary for all people, such as the main principles, and some are actually not necessary for all people. So it's not necessary nor expected that every person must know all the details about, let's say, resurrection or divine justice through, you know, personal investigation. To have faith in those principles is necessary. But to know every detail about those basic tenets of Islam is not expected to know every detail. Now, to make actually an inquiry into religious beliefs, one should first of all depend on one's reason. You know, the reason is the most important source of thought. The reason, the human faculty of reason, is the most important source of understanding. It's only through our reason, through the God-gifted faculty, which we call intellect or reason, that we know God, that we understand the religion, and we understand the goals for which we have been created. Let's have a break. We will be back.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes. And we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
After we apply our reason and after realizing the truth of the religion or the Prophet, one can use the guidance of the glorious Quran and the traditions of the Prophet for further studies. The Prophet has wanted all Muslims to refer to his household for understanding the real interpretation of the glorious Quran in his pure tradition. It has been reported that the Prophet, peace be upon him, said, "I leave two religious things among you, that by grasping them you will never go astray after me, the divine book and my household, and they will never separate from each other until they come to me near the Kawthar. Now be careful how you behave with them." You know, this is a very important saying from the Prophet, which clearly states that we need, first of all, the Quran for guidance, for knowledge, for understanding the religion, And then we need the teachings of the Prophet in his household, and they cannot be separated from each other. So we should take care of our beliefs, basic ones and derivative ones. If a person is not expert or skilled in discovering Islamic thoughts and concepts through the glorious Quran and the tradition, he must not interpret them according to his desires. The Quran is, of course, the most important source, but it's not possible for every individual to infer Islamic laws from the Quran. So it is with the help of the scholars, it's with the help of the experts that we can understand the Quran. We can discover Islamic thoughts and Islamic concepts. So it's not sometimes possible for us to interpret them. And if we interpret them, we are very much likely to make wrong interpretation or to pass, you know, judgments which are not correct. So we must rely on those who have sufficient knowledge. I give you the example of medicine. To use, for example, medical books or to use doctor's advice, you have to act according to the prescriptions of physicians. But we cannot act according to the prescriptions of false physicians. So we cannot ask for the details. There are books, medical books, there are lectures, there are, you know, sources in medicine, but we cannot understand them. So we have to follow the Prophet's teachings, we have to follow the Prophet's advice, and it may be very difficult and perhaps an uphill task to understand the Quran, understand the prophetic tradition without knowledge, without expertise. Just as we cannot understand scientific books or books in the field of medicine, we need to follow doctor's advice only without having to go for the philosophy and for the reasons. The same is the case with the prophetic teachings, and with the same is the case with the Quran, which we cannot understand without the help of the interpreter of the Holy Quran. The interpreters of the Quran are the ones who specialize in that study or who specialize in that field.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
So, brothers and sisters, according to Islam, our happiness is not only based on our faith or beliefs, deeds as well as virtues bear on our happiness. Islamic practical laws are to guide us in the realm of actions, especially when our intellect or conscience is uncertain. Every person can learn jurisprudence and the related sciences and become a mujtahid. And of course, then he can rely on his own understanding once he becomes, for example, a jurist in the field of law. He can rely on his own understanding. But it is indeed a difficult process and needs much cleverness, long work and practice. Those who are prepared for this job, they have to go a long way before they are able to understand, you know, what is in the Quran and what is in the prophetic tradition. That's all for this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share he knows.
The Limelight.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump and his two eldest children continued their fight to overturn a decision requiring the former president to answer questions under oath as part of an investigation into his business practices, filing fresh paperwork on Monday, 21st of March, that accused a New York judge of abusing his discretion in issuing the decision. The article you're about to hear has been written by staff at the British newspaper The Guardian. The piece is titled, Trump Files Appeal Against Manhattan Judge in Latest Bid to Overturn Subpoena. Former U.S. President Donald Trump and his two eldest children continued their fight to overturn a decision requiring the former president to answer questions under oath as part of an investigation into his business practices, filing fresh paperwork on Monday, 21st of March, that accused a New York judge of abusing his discretion in issuing the decision. In papers filed in a state appeals court on Monday, 21st of March, lawyers for the former president said that Manhattan judge Arthur Engoron failed to properly weigh constitutional and ethical concerns that they'd raised about the investigation brought by the New York Attorney General Letitia James. Lawyers for Donald Trump and his two eldest children, Ivanka and Donald Trump Jr., want the appellate division of the state's trial court to overturn Judge Engoron's ruling, which came on 17th of February, and invalidate Letitia James's subpoenas seeking their testimony. They detailed their arguments in a 72-page joint brief on Monday, rehashing prior claims that Letitia James, a Democrat, had a political vendetta against Donald Trump, a Republican, and that forcing the Trumps to testify would violate their constitutional rights because answers could be used against them in a parallel criminal investigation. The Trumps' lawyers contend that Judge Engoron was wrong to limit the scope of the two-hour hearing prior to his ruling and that he didn't have all of the information necessary to make a proper ruling. The lawyers said Judge Engoron denied their request for hearings exploring the nature of coordination between Letitia James's office and the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, which is running the criminal investigation, and whether Letitia James was engaging in selective prosecution. Letitia James issued a statement in response to the Trumps' court filing on Monday. Donald J. Trump, Donald Trump Jr., and Ivanka Trump were ordered by a judge to comply with our investigation into Mr. Trump and the Trump Organization's financial dealings, Letitia James said. Despite continuous efforts to impede this investigation, no one can stop our pursuit of justice, no matter how powerful they are. We will continue to follow the facts without fear and without favor. The Trumps and the New York Attorney General's office have agreed to pause enforcement of the subpoenas during the appeals process. Court papers indicated the appellate court will probably hear arguments in May or June of this year. Letitia James has said her investigation has uncovered evidence of Trump's company, the Trump Organization, used fraudulent or misleading valuations of assets like golf courses and skyscrapers to get loans and tax benefits. If Manhattan Judge Arthur Engoron's ruling is upheld, it could force Donald Trump into a tough decision about whether to answer questions or stay silent, citing his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination, something he's criticized others for doing in the past. Meanwhile, former U.S. President Donald Trump has reached an agreement with the New York Attorney General's office that will temporarily spare him from having to answer questions under oath as part of an investigation into his business, as the former president's appeal process in the case continues. In February, a New York judge ordered that Trump and his two eldest children, Donald Jr. and Ivanka, must appear for a deposition as part of New York State's civil investigation into Trump Organization's business practices, including allegations of family company fraudulently inflated the value of its assets. Donald Trump has since appealed that ruling, a move that will probably delay the battle over his testimony by months. Under the new agreement between Trump and the Attorney General's office, detailed in court papers on Thursday, Trump and his two children must sit for depositions within 2 weeks of a ruling from the appeals court, if it upholds the lower court decision requiring their testimony. Lawyers for the Trumps and the Attorney General's office also agreed to an accelerated briefing schedule to speed up the appeals process, which court papers say is due by 31st of March. Lawyers for Trump and Ivanka and Donald Jr. filed papers on Monday with the Appellate Division of the state's trial court, seeking to overturn the Manhattan judge Arthur Engoron's 17th of February ruling that they testify. They argue that ordering the Trumps to testify violates their constitutional rights because answers they give in the civil investigation by the Attorney General Letitia James could be used against them in a parallel criminal investigation. Under the agreement reached on Thursday, Donald Trump and his two children are temporarily spared from having to answer questions under oath.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.